We take a journey back into time to a simple Japan in the 1960s as the film attempts to capture the zeitgeist of the Showa generation. But will this drama fit into the pantheon of post-millennial kaiju films, or will it fall into another category, one of obscurity, perhaps forever? Find out along with us as we watch this film for the first time. This is Kaiju vs. History, Demaking, the Sea Monster.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your motorcycle riding comic inspired host, Miles. And joining me is my co-host who provides the local tweens with Twix, Patrick. Were there Twix in this movie? I don't remember the Twix.
No, you're just giving them all kinds of stuff all the
time. Okay, that's what I thought.
It'd be funny if they had Twix in 1960s Japan. but yeah. I don't remember that intro when that was written, but now I want a Twix.
So we are talking about Demaking the Sea Monster, which is a 2009 Japanese kaiju drama film directed by Kotaro Teruyuchi and written by Takashi Imashiro, based off Imashiro's 1991 manga of the same name. Prior to doing this show, Patrick, had you ever heard of this movie?
No, I don't believe I have. And this fell through our cracks a few times of potentially getting this on the list, because I don't know if there was a English DVD. It only became available to us to watch, I want to say, in the last couple of years. I watched this on Tubi.
Me too.
What about you?
I also watched it on Tubi.
Tubi's got such a crazy deep
Tubi catalog. Like, legit has an insane library. I will say they are not super particular about localizations a lot of the times. There is some nefariously legal stuff on Tubi. A lot of the like bootleg anime stuff from the late 80s and early 90s is on there, where like, they took scenes from like Gundam and stuff, like for a South Korean show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's some wild stuff on there. Maybe it's Chinese, but it's on Tubi. The legality of it is very... How did that happen? I can't remember. Our buddy Drew would know, because we've talked about it several times. But yeah, Tubi is a gold mine. The localization of this particular film was a little struggling. There were some errors pretty frequently, I feel like, in either the general translation or just the spelling and, you know, conjugation of sentences.
Yeah. And beyond kind of a bad translation, there was also, I think, thematically some things that are kind of lost on perhaps you and I watching this 10 years after it came out.
And it does make me wonder if the manga. it does make me wonder if something is lost in translation. Literally, if there is like a localization issue. I don't know if what we watched was a fan sub. I know a DVD exists. I don't know if what we watched is from it. But this, I guess before we start talking about everything around this movie, Patrick, tell me, what is in a title?
A whole bunch, I guess, for such a small movie. Demakingu in Japanese, both the name of the manga it's based on and the movie. So just Demakingu, that's the name of the titular monster. The Sea Monster is the subtitle for, I guess, a DVD did come out, I think, relatively recently. I don't know if it was right when this film came out. I'm realizing I don't have that in my notes, but the Sea Monster is the U.S. version. And if you find this on Tubi, it'll be, I think, Demaking the Sea Monster.
Yeah. I think the problem with this movie is its title. If it was just called Demaking without the subtitle, I think it works just fine. What is interesting about this movie is, I mean, it's a 2009 kind of potentially magical reality drama film.
Yeah.
And this is a time, and I only know this because of some of the films that I really enjoy, where you were getting these kind of weird independent movies coming out of Japan. One of my top 10 favorite movies of all time is 2009's Fish Story. It's a film that I've talked on two different podcasts now. I have made many people watch it. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie. Came out around the same time as this film. Doing not the same thing, but playing with genre, playing with, and the genre is the theme. It's not the purpose of the film itself, in the same way that this isn't really a kaiju film, although it's about a kaiju, kind of.
Yeah, that's the thing. It is one of those things that kind of skirts the line of, you know, this is really about these like kids and a lot of things, but like the destruction of the world around them as they're, you know, kind of forced into these boxes. But there is a kaiju in it.
There is. There's so much about this film that I truly do love. I think one of the things about this movie is it does, I don't know much about its budget in terms of like how much they had to work with, but it does feel a little unfinished, which really? I think to me, it does. To me, I feel like there's a good 15, 20 minutes they could have kept going. Like I really wanted this, and this might even be my log line. I wanted this to be like the kaiju equivalent of Stand By Me. And it's so close to getting there. Like there's some great moments.
It's so close to Stand By Me. It's so close to a little bit of the Goonies, you know, a little bit of that kind of fun coming of age. And this is described in Japan as a similar kind of film, a coming of age film. But I agree with you. There's some bits that are missing. And
I also don't find the conclusion to be super satisfying. So rushed.
It just ends.
And I mean, I get that. I don't mind a movie that just ends, but I don't think the movie had accomplished what it set out to do fully.
I tried my best to find the manga on which it's based. Hilariously. So
is the manga also a coming of age thing, or is it straight up about the monster?
No. It's very much about the time period in which it's set, which I believe is probably Imashiro's kind of adolescence, as when he wrote this, it was 1991, and I want to say, actually, I have very little clue how old he is, but 1960, so he was about 30 or so when he made the manga, and was probably, like I said, about, you know, he was the age of one of the younger kids in the movie around that time. Yeah, the manga, you can find a lot of pages of it online, but not anywhere that I've been able to find to
no translation.
Not translation. I would just take the Japanese and try to translate it myself. But the art that I did see, I really enjoyed.
Yeah, it looks good. It
does seem to follow kind of a similar plot with the two main characters fantasizing about this monster that's going to come. The other title I didn't get to in our background is the alternative title, which is Dimmaking the Space Monster, which makes a lot more sense because the monster is coming from space and I don't think spends any time in the sea.
No. And if I'm not mistaken, I think you said this, the manga itself is unfinished, correct?
So it was originally unfinished in its like serialized form. But there was such an upcry from fans and other artists that it was finished in, you know, graphic novel or like full manga form later on.
Okay.
I think only a few years later on. And yeah, I don't understand if it's, I don't think it's like that kind of classic of a story that it like had to be made into a movie, but it did get attention from, you know, there's some pretty, I think, popular actors, a comedian at the time taking on the main role. I guess not the main role, but one of the two.
Well, he main pops roles. Up in several of this director's movies, right?
Yeah. So we can talk a little bit about the cast. The film is mostly two main characters in Koichi and Hiroshi. And Hiroshi, I want to say, is the one played by the Japanese comedian that kind of took on this more serious role.
That would make sense because Koichi is IRL Kamen Rider.
he would go on to, right?
So Kamen Rider W came out same year.
Oh, right. Right around the same time. Yeah. Yeah. So very much Kamen Rider inspired writer.
Yeah. I am absolutely assuming that, I mean, Demon King was, you know, released the same year. I would assume while Kamen Rider was being made, I don't think he's the writer itself. I think the Kamen Rider is a different actor. But right around the time that show was coming out, I mean, these things had to be kind of in the works at the same time. So it probably wasn't lost on the director that he had someone who was either starring or about to star in actual Kamen Rider thing. But the fact that he has the green helmet and the scarf, I mean, it's it's very old school Kamen Rider. And I just watched Shin Kamen Rider. So like I was really thinking about it then.
Some amazing kind of ties to kind of classic tokusatsu like that. And so that actor is Takeshi Nadagi, and his character Koichi, his father in the movie, is played by a boxer, a former boxer who went by the name Guts.
Oh, cool.
And just looking into it, it's very interesting. Guts Ishimatsu is known for like his victory kind of celebration where he like pumps his fists into the hand, which has turned into just something called the Guts pose, which supposedly is in a ton of video games. And
I would imagine like Street Fighter and stuff like that.
Yes, very much Street Fighter and other games of that nature. But yeah, the pose of just like just pumping one hand into the air kind of thing. So it's like a cultural thing.
I don't know why we both did it as if anyone could see us.
Yeah, we're proving it to ourselves. he turned into more of like a general entertainer and then actor later in his career after he retired from boxing. But some very interesting actors for this very small project by director Kataro Terauchi, and not a ton of other Aju connections that I was able to find. But the director is pretty prolific in making like smaller kind of like found footage horror movies. He has a series called, and I don't think he originated, but he's done a ton of them, Paranormal Surveillance Camera.
I am a little,
guess
a little
what that is about. Yeah.
I mean, Japanese found horror footage is like some of my favorite stuff.
He's just done a ton of those, but
because one of my favorite directors, Japanese directors, is Koji Shirayashi, who did Noriyu the Curse and has done a lot of found footage stuff. In fact, I mean, this means nothing. Actually, if you're listening to the show, you probably are interested in Japanese cinema in general. A J-horror box from Arrow Blu-ray set was just announced, and two of his films are on there. I'm very, very excited. But yeah, no, I haven't watched any of that one, actually. I've watched your Paranormal Found Footage show, and I am struggling to remember the name. It's very, very long. But those TV shows, low budget they may be, but like, they're well done. I haven't seen this particular one, but I having seen some of the other stuff that has come out around the time, like it's good stuff. So I'd be excited to check it out, because I think the one thing I really did enjoy about this movie is I enjoyed how it looked. I enjoyed how it was directed. I felt like there was a voice here. Everything just felt a little unfinished. The movie itself, I mean, we kind of focus on Kame, who is kind of the leader of the pack of a bunch of like neighborhood kids. They all seem to be latchkey kids who form like a little urban exploration group that also love hanging out at a marine theme park.
Yeah, the marine theme park is a big part of this little teeny coastal town or region, I guess. But Kame is kind of, I think, middle school.
Highish, I think, even though he looks like he should be in college.
I think junior high or what they translate that out to is more like high school for us. And then we call high school college is like 18, 19, 20 kind of thing.
Yeah.
So okay. Koichi is supposed to be the quote unquote high school age, but I think he's riding a motorcycle. He's doing all kinds of stuff, like living by himself. And
He's living by himself. Is he riding a motorcycle? I thought that was
Koichi.
That's Koichi. I'm talking about Kame.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about them both. Koichi's supposed to be a little bit older. And
I figured he was probably like 22, 23, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know if they're that far apart, but they're There's also a very similar age gap between Kamei, the junior and kind of high, and the kids of the town who are definitely like middle school aged.
And those kids are great.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. And honestly, it's very slow, but all the kind of slice of life bits you get with the, oh gosh, I forget the name of it, the like urban exploration club or yeah, whatever
they're
called.
I can't remember exactly what they say, but yeah, they're the exploration club. It's great.
Yeah, it's all fun. Oh, it's here on Wickedzilla. We're a youth exploration group. The kids are Kenji, Masharu, and Hiro. My favorite part is when they're, I think when they're coming back from visiting the lighthouse and the cave and things like that, one of the kids gets like a flat tire and mm-hmm. Koichi has him ride his bike.
Kame.
And be like, oh, Kame. Sorry. Yes. Now I'm going to definitely get confused. Kame walks the bike back like 5 miles or something like that.
Yeah.
Is exhausted afterwards, but it's just one of those like very little things that really makes the character shine. I wish we got more things that Koichi was allowed to do, because Koichi is mostly by himself when the camera is with him.
Yeah, I mean, once they introduced Koichi, like once he goes to Tokyo, because before he's a mystery, and I'm fine with him being a mystery in that section. But once we go to Tokyo, and like we also see that like he's got a dad that's like harking onto him of like getting a real job, because we've seen him. He lives on this boat and with a suit of armor that he is apparently going to fight a creature called Demiking. Because story purpose wise, the exploration group is going ghost hunting one day in a marina. And they find this old boat that isn't registered and doesn't look like anyone's supposed to be there. And they find this suit of armor at the bottom of the boat. And as they're talking, obviously, Koichi kind of interrupts them and more or less says, yeah, this is my armor. I'm going to fight Demiking. And just says it matter-of-factly. And of course, everyone's like, well, what's Demiking? And he doesn't really say anything. And I think this is where the movie really starts. And there's so much about this movie that I positively love. I love this depiction of the Exploration Club. I love the relationship between Kame and his like younger classmates. I love their little adventures. And then I love when they are trying to, when Koichi like splits town for Tokyo, he sends them on a freaking scavenger hunt.
That is a fun part of the movie. And it seems like something that all those kids would really enjoy. The mystery of like what exactly he knows about Demiking and what it is he's thinking he's going to be facing is the vast majority of what this movie is about, and where we get, I mean, an amazing sequence, which is Kame's dream after coming back from the scavenger hunt, or I guess I should say nightmare, which it's not telegraphed as such while you're watching it, which is interesting. He just kind of like wakes up and the town, the seaside town, is being attacked by this giant creature. And it's a great kaiju destruction sequence. It's
a great cool
part of the movie.
I also like the design. You can tell they didn't have a ton of money, but it looks old school. It's a kind of a snail kind of visage to it, even though it's got
space
like
snail
legs.
For sure.
I just thought it was cool. It's something you just don't see that often. And I thought they pulled off the creature very well. I thought the dream sequence was pretty great. I like that there's kind of a standoff between Kame and the creature in terms of like, you know, staring each other down. And that's really the climax of the movie, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's
so I do want
thematically,
say,
but it is the most exciting thing to happen in the movie.
I do want to point out that I'm not upset. I whether or not Demiking is real is not my issue with this movie at all. I feel like the movie just feels like it does just end, and not in a satisfying way. And it's not one of those things where like, oh, that's how life is. No, it just seems to kind of like, it's like, what if No Country for Old Men, but without resolution? You know, it's one of those things where it doesn't end mid-sentence, but it almost feels like it does. And there is this idea that like, okay, Kame has taken upon himself that he's going to write a novel about Demiking. Which he immediately like gives up apparently, and says, "Oh yeah, it was just kid stuff. that's it. Yeah. And like, I'm fine if that's the conclusion you want to reach, but I feel like we skipped an entire section of a story that we didn't earn this moment. And then Koichi is just working in Tokyo.
So I was interested.
He's asked, I'm so sorry, mm-hmm. but like he's asked, I'll never go back that, or are you gonna go back to that town again? He goes, probably not.
Yeah.
The
setting, the time period, I think is a very important time period, and we'll talk about it a little bit more in a bit. But I was very interested in kind of Japanese takes on this, and I found a tweet from Backyard Film Preservation Society who, in their Twitter X bio, mentioned how they liked kind of clunky, imperfect films like this. The tweet is describes Demaking by Imashiro Takashi. It is an unfinished world-based monster manga with cult popularity. In the 1960s, a young man living in a rural seaside town has a vision of a rampaging monster, travels to Tokyo to prepare for its appearance, and fights like Don Quixote. The monster is a symbol of the high growth economy that is coming to an end and beginning to distort or perhaps even collapse the bubble economy that was in Japan. One of the characters is a man who sells poetry books at Shinjuku Station. I don't know why that is important. Maybe he lives nearby, but I thought that was very interesting. The thing that I mostly took by the time period choice of late 60s, early 70s is, you know, both the manga and I think the poster for the movie have that shot of Koichi riding his motorcycle by dozens of smokestacks. And it's one of the opening scenes of the film. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of another kaiju movie set in, I think, the exact same year, came out the exact same year, All Monsters Attack, Miles. And in a lot of ways, this movie mirrors that one as well, as both are about these kids having dream sequences about kaiju.
Exactly. And that's where, I mean, I was kind of famously really into All Monsters Attack, famously, like anyone cares. But I think the thing about All Monsters Attack is that it's finished. There's a direct line. And I feel like this doesn't complete its sentence, because it's interesting you bring up the thing about the economy, because Kame's family owns a tofu store. Mm-hmm. And that does play a role, a very background role. Like, it's mentioned a couple of times. Oh, I'm going to take over the tofu store. That's what my life's going to be. So I don't care about school.
Yeah.
And we are told that the tofu store isn't doing so hot after this bubble had burst. But it's not really a theme. To me, it felt like the movie was trying to make more of a commentary on growing up.
Oh, and for sure. I think Demaking is kind of a representation of all things childlike, is this belief. Right,
exactly.
Something terrible happening and only you can stop it, or you can rise to face the demons that are come down the road. And then Koichi just kind of gives up and moves to Tokyo and gets a job like his father wants. And Kame gives up on writing the story. And yeah, it is very much about, besides the time period in which it's set, the characters moving from childhood to adulthood. And
we also get that sequence, way. You know, at the towards the end of Kame with his group of kids who are now where he was. They've mm-hmm. got the shaved heads and the black uniforms, and they're now where he was. And even then you can sense there's a little bit of distance. Like there's a familiarity there. They're excited to see him, but you can tell they're not all palling around town anymore, it seems. And this is where I wish that we had another 20 or 30 minutes. I wanted to explore that. Like, I don't mind using the kaiju as, like, it doesn't have to be real. It can be just a thematic thing. I'm good with that. But I really did want this to be like kaiju's Stand By Me. And this is one of those things that separates a decent movie from a phenomenal movie. And that's what sucks, because there's so much of this film that I absolutely enjoy as someone who just enjoys cinema. This is a good movie.
I really enjoy the direction. I think the acting is pretty excellent as well. But it looks like they spent more money on it than I think they actually did. You take a look at some of the kind of film backers for the Demaking Production Committee, the folks that funded And they're not major companies. They're not major studios. So this is mostly, this is a pretty independent kaiju film. And like you mentioned, just got a wave of them, like kind of all after another with Rego and Big Man Japan and Monster X Strikes Back. Now Demaking. So really glad we had a chance to watch this one. Do you want to get to rating this film? I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm looking up the other stuff the director's done. He's done a lot of kind of what seems to be like direct-to-video sort of horror. I know he did a follow-up to, actually, so that was Slitmouth Woman. He did the second one, The Scissors Massacre, which was right before this. It's not great. But yeah, he's got a lot of these paranormal legacies, but he's also looks to have some softcore stuff in his repertoire.
A lot of these kind of independent directors, I feel like, had a background in pink films. And yeah, I'm not really
I definitely get that. Although I do want to see this one on his list, Shaolin Grandma.
There's some that, pretty.
That sounds awesome. Look, I am a fan of like, gosh, what's his name? Stephen Chow. Where like I like Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle and stuff like that. I love that kind of stuff. So if it's even close to that, I'm in, because Shaolin Grandma sounds kind of hilarious. But yeah, let's talk about our ratings. How did you feel overall for your personal enjoyment? Just like outside of everything else, like personally, how did you feel about this movie?
So this is a hard one to rate because I feel like it is probably a much better Japanese film and not a great kind of international film enjoyer experience. I feel like so much of this is made for the Japanese audience. And it's one of the reasons why things like Takashi Yamazaki, the director of Godzilla Minus One, and his Always Sunset on Third Street films, I just don't think would play the same as they did in Japan, because they are very much for the Japanese audience first. And I feel like this one's the same way. They're talking mostly to, I think, people that lived through that time period as well. So there's another level, you know, of removal, in that I wasn't born yet when this film takes place. But I'm sure there are a lot of American films that are similar, that are kind of obtuse to folks from other countries. But it does feel like I'm missing a piece of the puzzle to love this movie. But it's one of those things, if you go in not knowing what it's about, this first experience is great watching it. Fortunately, I had a good amount kind of spoiled in researching the movie. And
Drew, I'm going blind.
Well, I mean, I make up the notes for it sometimes beforehand to make sure. I was
don't
like,
do that.
Well, I had to make sure it was actually a kaiju movie. And I think in my confirmation, I gathered, I was like, oh, well, it is, but it's a dream. So, you know,
it's on Wikizilla, close enough.
But this is one, if you go in not knowing the main kind of crux, I think you'll have a good time. I enjoyed this. I want to say maybe a little bit more kind of the same as Big Man Japan, and that movie's just wild and fun. So I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 for personal enjoyment. What about you, Miles?
So I want to take a second to, because we didn't talk about this, the log line, which is, I think, even on Tubi for this movie, lies to you. In 1969, this movie takes place in 1970, a young man named Haichia finds an anonymous letter in a glass bottle, which foretells of the apocalyptic arrival of a cosmic monster. Since then, he has physically prepared himself in a lone struggle for that fateful day when the monster will arrive.
Haichi is Koichi's.
I know. I understand that
name, but that's something
not
from
this movie's about.
I was gonna say, maybe that's something that's in the manga. Well, that's definitely not a scene in the movie that I watch.
No. But the descriptions that the official description on Wikizilla, and I'm going to just double check, because I'm pretty sure that was that's the official
description on Tubi.
Yep. I'm just waiting for this thing to load. Yep. Same thing. So they just yanked it from that. Yeah, it's not what this movie's about. So I had not skewed expectations, but I was expecting a little bit of a different movie, because I was wondering where Haichia was going to be the more of the main role instead of Kame.
Where does the bottle show up?
Yeah, also the bottle, which, I mean, technically shows up in the scavenger hunt, I guess. But like, no.
We don't see him finding it. And, you know, we don't get a ton from Koichi's point of view, fortunately.
Despite the fact that I think this movie is unfinished, I do feel like this movie kind of feels, especially the third act, feels like a first draft. And that's unfortunate because so much of this movie is fantastic. It's exceptionally directed. It's got some beautiful moments. It feels very real. The actors, the kid actors especially, are very good. It's also a good story. And everything about this movie just works. The first two acts of this movie, I mean, are... If they had stuck the landing, this might be in your 9 or 10 category, just in terms of personal enjoyment as a good indie film. Unfortunately, this movie doesn't stick the landing and sort of dovetails after its nightmare scene. There is good stuff. There is stuff to be talked about and discussed. You can find the meaning. Obviously, there are people who have done so, but it does sort of keep it from soaring for me. So I'm going with an 8 out of 10 because as far as my personal enjoyment, I did very much love my experience watching this movie. And my only disappointment is how it finishes. So I can't completely wipe it off just because the ending doesn't quite work when so much of this film is so good. So I'm going with an 8 out of 10 for this one.
And for the technical aspect, I'm kind of in a similar situation. I really enjoy a lot of aspects of the film. From the directing to the acting, set locations, it just feels good to have like a really natural feeling kind of world to dive into. And I didn't really recognize it as being very 1970s dressed all the time, but you know, that's one of the things of not having a lot of frames of reference for that time period is, you know, I couldn't tell if like, I don't know, there's a out of place clothing.
The only time where I would have felt that is when they go to Koichi's house and that girl answers the door. Mm-hmm. I don't know if her outfit was of the time. Everything else kind of felt fine, but like she did kind of feel anachronistic to me.
Takeshi Kazuno is the special effects coordinator, and I will say the entire Dimmicking sequence, which is a mix of, you know, kind of CGI and blue screen special effects and some great practical stuff, is great. It does exactly what it needs to in this film, and it looks like a $1 million was spent when probably nowhere near that was. So I feel like the source material for the manga is probably also a little bit thin, so this is the story that we got, you know, unfortunately. So yeah, I'm giving a 7 out of 10 as well for the technical. What about you, Miles?
So I'm right there with you. The 7 out of 10 is kind of where I'm at. I mean, I'm docking this mostly because of its script. I think the monster design was excellent. Like you said, I think that whole sequence is fantastic. The acting is great. The direction's fantastic. Like so much of this movie is so good. Mm-hmm. And I love that, you know, you were talking about the, you know, the locations, you really do feel like you're following these people on a slice of life journey because you don't feel like you're on a set. You feel like you are actually there on these locations. And the naturalistic style that the director used is just perfect for this movie. Mm-hmm. I wish this movie just stuck the landing. Like, and I mean, it sounds like I'm harping on this, but like this literally for me separates it from being, yeah, this is a good movie, to, oh, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like this could have been an all-timer for me as a great indie film that was doing something thematic and interesting with the kaiju genre, and it just doesn't quite get there. Like maybe it's on me for wanting it to be the Kaiju Stand By Me, but at the same time, that's where they were taking us. And when you start that journey and you just don't quite finish it, it's just because it just feels like there is a chunk of the movie that's missing, and yeah. I hate that because I don't want to take away from how good everything else about this movie is. But
if it's not missing, it's just oddly placed. Like the dream sequence is like maybe 10 minutes or so of the film.
Yeah.
And there's still like after he wakes up, there's a half hour, you know, of the movie left. And it's like if it was a little closer situated to the end, I think it might have a bit more impact.
Or if the script was more confident in what it was doing, I think that's that, or at least maybe it's the localization, But from what I've seen, that's probably not the purpose. I mean, not the problem.
I'm sorry. What's your score for the technical?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a 7.
Also 7. Okay.
Yeah, I said it was the same as yours.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah, I do feel it's, I think it's certainly very competent. It's very good. It's just not quite there for me.
And that brings me to my lowest score, which is its importance in kind of Kaiju Eiga. I think it's awesome that this film exists. I'm happy that we were able to get it on our list and watch a version of it. I sadly think that is now not super important in kind of the grand scope of Kaiju films. It is, you know, a Kaiju film, I would say definitely second. The looming threat that is really hanging over these kids' heads is adulthood more than anything. So I'm happy that these genres can intermix and say different things and bring in different audiences, and super happy I could find this on Tubi. There's so much Kaiju stuff on Tubi, and yeah, often re-releases like these might not have great translations, but like I said, this did get a DVD like after it came out in English in 2010. So, but it's one that I think our audience can probably skip if you're just looking for like the main beats of Kaiju cinema. So this is a very nice break in our Kaiju journey, having something so different and so interesting. But I'm giving it a 5 out of 10 for its importance. I enjoyed it. I just don't think a lot of Kaiju fans would get into it as much as we did. But what about you, Miles?
So I am stuck, because what this film should be is not what this film is. At the same time, if I was having a conversation with someone about Kaiju cinema, I'd be like, you know what you need to check out? Because I think that
you'd recommend this one.
I would, because I think people smarter than me are going to find more things to uncover. I think there might be something. I think there is something to what you said about there's probably more in the localization that we're not getting. But I think there is a lot to be found in this movie. And I think through conversation about this movie, not our conversation necessarily, because we're kind of just experiencing this for the first time. We're not sitting down on a table talking about this like men. But no, I mean, this is one of those things. I think the more people that see it and talk about it, the people are going to find more stuff. I think the podcast you mentioned, or the Twitter group that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, they're clearly seeing stuff in these movies. Like I certainly saw that, okay, there's an economic situation here, but it's glossed over. But these people caught on to it because they know more about the history of Japan and what was going on at the time than I do. And that adds another layer for me, because the filmmakers certainly knew that. And the audience that saw this theater in theaters also knew that. Me, as an American born in 1984, who, you know, has never taken a Japanese history course in terms of, you know, it's, you know, modern society, does not know that. You know, I don't know about that unless I actively researched it independently. So I still think there's a lot of value with this film. I think I give it a lot of points for attempting to use Kaiju cinema to do more. And I am always in favor of that. And so I'm being a little softer on this one in that respect. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 for its evocative nature, because it understands Kaiju cinema and it is trying to add to it in a different way. It just doesn't quite succeed, but I really do applaud that effort. And I do think people should seek this one out.
Right. Another 7 out of 10 for you. We'll bring your score to a 7.3 and mine to a 6.3, which means a number is our final score.
Well, it's not a math podcast.
I messed it up. Is this right? How's my brain be broke?
All right. So we're doing some live math here.
7.3 plus 6.3.
Oh, gosh. You?
I'm not in the calculator. Oh, no.
Good Lord, let me do it.
I'm normally pretty stealthy with doing the math like on the fly, because we don't necessarily talk about our scores beforehand.
6.8, which means it's a podcast. Wow. 7.
I don't, my math is broken on that, but you know, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. A podcast 7. That's actually,
I'm happy with that.
Pretty close. I was like, oh, it's probably gonna be like around 6 or 7. It's definitely not a great film, but I think it is, like you said, because of that ending.
It's so close. I mean, this is like, I mean, I don't want to say it's a too close to the sun. It's an ambitious film. I mean, there is something this film is trying to tackle that it just doesn't quite do. But I give it so much respect for the effort, because there is so much craft in this. There is so much of the script that is excellent. The actors are there. They are trying. They're doing a great job. The director is phenomenal. Like, I loved his eye. So naturalistic. Like, I legit felt like I was on this journey with these kids. And that's what you always want in a slice of life, you know, kids on bikes type of thing. You want to feel like you're part of the gang. And this absolutely does that. And so I would highly recommend people at least checking it out. It may not be everyone's cup of tea, but I think it's worth, you know, the look. And I'm glad we covered it for the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a corner of kaiju films I just didn't expect, you know, and I'm happy that we got it. So yeah, podcast final, 7 out of 10 for Demaking the Sea Monster. Really, Space Monster.
Speed Demaking. Just call Demaking.
Yeah, so you can find us on social medias at Kaiju Versus History. Email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. And we haven't gotten an email in a while, so feel free to email us your thoughts on kaiju films, any ones that we cover or about to cover. And rate, review our show, comment, and you can check out our Letterboxd, where we have all of our reviews up in 5-star formats, and look at what we are watching in the future. But what are we watching in the immediate future, Miles? What's coming up next week?
Well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. And we will catch you next time when we look at one of the most expensive films in the DreamWorks history, as they chase that Shrek dragon in a film that is more homage to the 1950s monster mashups than Eastern Kaiju Eiga. That's right. Tune in next time for History Versus Monsters Versus Aliens.